This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Now, this is something of a public service announcement, mainly aimed at the gentlemen. Valentine's Day is just around the corner, folks. It's just 4 days away. Danny Norton looking concerned in the studio. But how much should we be spending on Valentine's Day? And why shouldn't we have a monogamous relationship with our banks? We are discussing money, psychology, spending and happiness between now and 3 o'clock, as we're joined by Steve Cronin, founder of Dead Simple Saving. He's in the studio to answer all of that and more. Tell me, Steve, are you a romantic?
Well, what a loaded question. It depends who's listening, right?
Is your fiancé listening?
She might be listening.
Would she disagree?
I think being a romantic is important. You don't have to be a romantic every single day. If your partner wakes up and there's a rose on the bed, she might just get tired of rolling over onto thorns or whatever.
So that, you know, that's your line.
Exactly. Make it special. And don't confuse spending money with creating a special event for Valentine's Day.
I think you're dead right there, sir. I really do. We are 4 days away from what is apparently the most romantic day of the year. But the way a lot of people do kind of show their love is through spending big. So it could be cards, sweets, flowers, jewellery. The money just flows. At a date night or a staycation, well, yeah, the budget can just expand and expand. Now, what do you think would be a reasonable spend for Valentine's Day? Speaking as a man, and then I will answer as a lady.
I'm reading a fantastic book at the moment called Billion Dollar Whale, about this guy who basically stole billions from Malaysia. And he took his almost girlfriend on a date to the Palm. And he arranged for an amazing meal on the beach, just the two of them. There was a private fireworks display and then a helicopter.
Sorry. There's no such thing as a private fireworks display. Everyone gets to enjoy that. But it was put on just for them.
And then a helicopter appeared over the horizon and delivered a Cartier necklace or something like that. And the two didn't really speak. And it's just... It shows you what extremes you can go to with was this lady actually impressed, or would she have rather have had some witty banter?
Mm-hmm.
I suspect to some extent the latter. So don't go too far. I would say there's definitely a limit. What you need to think about is, how can I make this Valentine's Day amazing, and how can I make my loved one feel special? That partly requires you to be creative.
Definitely.
And not just get your credit card out. And it partly requires you to understand your loved one and what makes them feel loved.
Equally, they might think Valentine's Day is complete garbage, in which case you're totally wasting your money, and they might prefer a random act of kindness and romance and love on a completely different day, when you most feel like expressing your love.
That's very true. Although I think even the most Scrooge-like partner will still appreciate a rose on Valentine's Day. I don't think they're going to throw it in the bin.
I'm going to give my kind of insider tip here, speaking on behalf of the ladies, especially women who work, because there's nothing like, you know, your colleague getting an enormous bunch of flowers delivered to your desk early days, and you're kind of going, it's 9 o'clock. Am I going to get any flowers? Any flowers for me? Gentlemen, I would say it's quite nice to send flowers to work, just for those humble bragging rights, and do it early, because her annoyance will just increase as everyone else around her gets flowers. So start the day early. Don't think, I'll give her a card after work. No. You want to put it next to a toothbrush in the morning. Get the day off to a sweet start.
The problem you've got there, though, is that you then will start judging the other bunch of flowers that are being brought in.
Oh, I don't think so.
Oh, you say that. I mean, you're just talking about bragging. You're not going to brag if you happen to have the biggest bunch of flowers in there.
I'm honestly, I'd rather get a bunch of flowers that I really love, like, of, you know, genuinely, rather than a big, you know.
So thoughtful, going back to the point about creativity.
I trust that my husband knows which flowers I like, and it doesn't need to be the most ridiculous bunch, but something that he knows is, you know, something to my tastes.
How about you buy a massive bunch of plastic flowers that look amazing, and then every year you can just send the same flowers
to
the office.
You just dust them off.
Exactly.
Give them a good shake.
It's like the Christmas tree, right?
Now we're getting into the financial tips, are we? There we go. But I mean, you mentioned that word creativity there as well. But what about for those gentlemen such as myself
who Danny.
Are very creative in that in a sense, because it's just easy just to get out your credit card, isn't it? And just think, well, I can just maybe book a spa treatment or something here. Which I know she's going to like, but, you know, should we be budgeting for something like this, do you think?
I think, obviously, no one's going to turn down a spa date, but if you're basically ignoring her or using your credit card as an excuse not to be very impressive, then it's not going to make much of an impression. It might not be very memorable.
Worse, asking her what would she like for Valentine's Day, saying, can you send me a link? It has been known.
If you're going to do that, don't do it on the 12th of February.
Do it
maybe
2 weeks
July.
Ago.
July, you can do that. That's okay.
Why is that okay then for like birthdays and maybe other holidays, but not for Valentine's?
It's just lacking romance. It really is. I genuinely don't expect presents on Valentine's Day. I really don't. I would like a card with some really thoughtful words and maybe a nice bunch of flowers. I'd probably rather a plant over flowers, to be totally honest. Coming back to your spa point, I know very few people that actually enjoy couples massages, and we've had a couple of really unsuccessful couples massages in the past. Horrendous, horrendous experiences. One which was like a chocolate wrap, and we were in the couple's room. We had to go and then shower each other off. And it was like, you've got something on your ear. Like, I'll get you back. There's nothing romantic about it. And you're ultimately in a couple's massage just lying, ignoring each other. Someone starts snoring. Someone kind of grunts. No. Flowers, yes. A book, I think, is lovely to get on Valentine's Day. Something really thoughtful. My husband's not listening because it's work time. Just bought him a jigsaw, inspired by Danny Norton.
There we go. So you're getting creativity from me.
Yeah,
I like it.
Because it's something we can do together.
Yeah. I mean, but Steve, I mean, you're all about the money, aren't you? You're all about the, you know, kind of saving money and I suppose budgeting as well. So where should the money that you, if you are going to buy a puzzle or whatever it may be, a massage treatment, where should that be coming from your budget, do you think? Do you budget for Valentine's Day? The start of the year, you've got your kind of aims, your money aims for the year.
He doesn't at all.
Have you got Valentine's written down, underlined in red ink, of course?
I'm all about value. So whether that is spending money with something that's wildly successful, then that's good value. Or spending a little bit. I mean, just think, if you went to her favorite restaurant, but her favorite kind of like standard restaurant, and then you slipped the waiters 100 dirhams and you said, look, can you just throw these roses around her when she sits down? That would be awesome.
Watch out for thorns. Yeah.
How much is that going to cost you? It's going to cost you 100 dirhams. All the restaurants are cursing me now. So do you need to plan these things in advance? If you're going to spend a lot, or you don't have a lot, then yes, it is worth thinking in advance. But you don't have to blow a hole in your budget. And to some extent, this is what credit cards are for, that it gives you 30 days to find that money. Just make sure that whatever you spend, you can pay off your credit card in full at the end of the month. Otherwise, it won't be worth it.
Just coming back to the point earlier about what your Valentine would actually like. And one of the books we had to read as part of our marriage preparation course was The Five Languages of Love. And this, it's such an interesting book, something that we've kind of come back to time and time again. It talks about there are five languages of love. There's words of affirmation, there's physical touch, there's quality time, there's act of service, and there's gift giving. If your language of love is gift giving or that of your partner, then go for it. If your partner, such as my husband, would rather that I went and go and got the car washed, he never loves me more than when I've had the car washed. It's literally the way to his heart. Then don't waste your money. You've got to think about what's appropriate for you as a couple and try to not feel the pressure.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking finance between now and three, and joined in the studio by Steve Cronin. He is the founder of Dead Simple Saving for a special finance clinic. Talking today about, should we have a monogamous relationship with the bank? And, well, as ever, Danny and I love a bit of friends philosophy.
Doesn't matter how much we love them, monogamy is too cruel a rule.
I was going to think we could also, and we were on a break. So, Steve, do you think we should have a monogamous relationship with our bank?
Are you going to be cruel to your bank and break its heart by leaving it? I'm not sure. I think, like any relationship, there may come a time where you get annoyed by your bank, or your bank gets annoyed with you.
Why would my bank get annoyed with me?
Well, you might lose your job.
Mm.
You might crash your car into someone and cause some kind of problem. Your other half might have an accident or even pass away. And if you have a joint account, that account might get frozen. There are many ways where things can go wrong.
And presumably many ways where we can get annoyed with our banks as well. So it sounds like you're not going for the monogamous approach. So we can and maybe should have multiple relationships?
Yes, this is true. There's no such thing as cheating, I think, when it comes to multiple bank relationships. I would say this for small businesses, and I would definitely say this for individuals as well. You should have at least two banking relationships in the UAE, as well as one back home. Or if you don't trust your home country, then offshore somewhere.
So what are we using those two different banks for here in the region?
One is a backup. So what I typically recommend is that you have one local bank and one international bank. And one bank will obviously receive your salary. And then the other one, you can just keep 100 dirhams in there if you want. But it's just so that if something goes wrong, if your account gets frozen or for some reason your relationship goes wrong with your bank, you have another bank where you can receive money, you can send money, you can maybe take a little bit of money out. That gives you resilience. And that is so, so important. If you want to sleep at night, then you need to have resilience in your financial system. Yeah.
So how then do we choose the best bank and banks for us? Because they all want our money.
That's a good question. I mean, to be honest, all banks are going to be annoying, right? That's just in all countries. That's just the unwritten rule. At some point, they're going to annoy you. So there's no such thing as the perfect bank. What you can look at is very practically, do they have lots of ATMs and branches? Are they large and fairly safe? Have there been any rumors about them collapsing or laying off lots of staff or having a merger? I don't think mergers are anything particular to worry about. There's been plenty of mergers here and they've passed off fine. It's just something to bear in mind. On the positive side, lots of banks are offering 2-for-1 deals, cinema vouchers, all these sorts of things. And this is a fairly expensive town, and so that can definitely help.
Also, in terms of who your company banks with as well, can make a big difference in terms of how quickly you get paid, and the kind of the smooth transactions can often make life a little bit easier. And this sounds a really superficial thing to say, but my banking app is excellent. And it makes my life so much easier.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. And maybe even try different banks until you find one you love. Talk to your friends, talk to your colleagues. The other advantage of using a bank that has a good relationship with your company is that your loans might be cheaper. If that bank really trusts your company, then the interest rates that you pay on any loan will be far, far cheaper. That makes a huge difference.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Steve Cronin joining us live in the studio. He is the founder of Dead Simple Saving. We're looking at something of a special finance clinic. He's taking your questions and we're looking at some of the hot topics in the world of money too. We've already talked Valentine's Day, but I'm just curious, Steve, you have a background in psychology and obviously are now an expert when it comes to money. What link is there between spending and happiness? I know this is something that I'm possibly a little bit guilty of, but I'm intrigued to get your take on this. Is there a link between buying things and being happy?
People think that there is a very strong link between buying things and being happy, but that's probably because they haven't tried not buying things and then discovering that they were equally happy, if not more happy. And so the link is pretty tenuous, and you have to be really careful as you get a pay rise. Look, we all work really hard in this town, and it's easy to fill that hole in your life and in your heart by spending money. But what's much better to do is to address that hole and say, well, actually, I want to be happy as a person. That happiness has to come from within rather than from spending on fancy phones, fancy hamburgers, things like that.
Did you say handbags or hamburgers then? Both of which are very, very valid to spend money on.
That's very true. You can get golden hamburgers here, I'm sure.
Dubai, of course you can. Do you think spending money, silly question, can therefore be addictive? People chasing that rush that they get either at the cash point or when they show somebody something that they've bought or have finally got something after a long time?
it is massively addictive. And in studies of happiness, you see that this is a very short term happiness. It's like reading a page turner or buying a handbag or buying that 50th pair of shoes. It will make you feel good temporarily, but it won't make you feel really as nearly as good as doing something that you feel passionate about. If you love golf or paddleboarding or sitting on the beach with your friends, whatever it is, that is going to make you feel much happier. And then what will make you feel even happier is doing something where you are making a difference to the world. So whether that is volunteering at a disabled charity at the weekend, or donating some money, or using your skills to teach people things, that is what true long-lasting happiness is going to be.
Now, but it does feel like the world around us is very much set up to encourage us to spend. Trying to put the blinkers on and stay strong can be really, really difficult. Is there anything, any kind of practical tips you can offer, whether it's unfollowing certain accounts or disabling automatic credit card payments on your phone for, you know, certain websites, that can help in our mission to stop spending on the wrong things?
You have to have a bit of discipline. So going back to learning how to delay gratification and the classic marshmallow experiment, where the kid has a marshmallow in front of him, and if the investigator goes away for 10 minutes, and if the kid has not eaten the marshmallow, they get a second one. You have to apply that to your life, because they've shown that those kids who were able to resist eating that marshmallow were much, much more successful and happier 30 years later. So this is real science. If you feel the urge to go and buy something that you know you don't really need, just think, is it because I'm unhappy? And try saying no. There's a real joy in saying no to yourself a little bit. It's the equivalent of having a cold shower. You know, it's not fun having a cold shower, but actually it can be super good for you. And it can make you feel invincible. Once you've actually turned that shower to cold, you can do anything.
I know what I'm doing tonight. Now, Steve, in that same vein, how about earnings being related to happiness? And I was just saying to you earlier that I've spoken to a number of people over the last couple of weeks who are in really, on paper, fantastic jobs, great salary, tick, 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 time of their lives career-wise, but family life is suffering, work-life balance is non-existent, and relationships are ultimately in a bit of trouble because of long hours, but chasing the money. What do we know about happiness levels and salary levels?
What we see in studies is that if you earn more than about $70,000 in a year, beyond that, your happiness levels are unlikely to increase, because you can afford pretty much all the basic stuff, even beyond the basic stuff that's going to make you reasonably happy. You can afford a nice home, you can afford a decent car, you can take your family out for nice meals. And so beyond that, you're just not going to get too much happiness. Finding balance is so important, and also is having intention. Mm-hmm. So many people who work hard, they tend to be the kind of paranoid alpha types who are really tough on themselves. They end up being tough on their families as well. And you have to have intention with your money. If you know that you can just do this and stick it out for two more years, and then you can relax or go and do something completely different that you're actually put on this earth to do, then that's okay. You and your family, if you agree, can get through it. But if you are just on the treadmill and you're spending more money because you're unhappy, and then your partner's unhappy and your kids are unhappy because you never see them, then this is a real situation. And you either do it with intention for a specific period of time, or you get out. If you're a lawyer, you move in house or something like that, where the hours are a lot better and the pay isn't necessarily that much worse.
I think that's a really good point about being on the same page, because I feel like that's the crux of so many of these issues, that husband or wife, whoever it is that's kind of on that career path, is doing that indefinitely. And perhaps their spouse isn't aware that this is going to be indefinitely. I think this is going to be a bit rough. And yes, maybe it's a 5-year plan of, we're going to really power this, and we're going to make this job, we're going to make this city, you're going to make this move really, really work for us. But there has to be some kind of end in sight, and you both need to be on the same page and ultimately on the same team and keep that communication going, because otherwise things get really, really complicated.
So many people are chasing status and looking around them to see to see their relative status compared to others. And this is always going to end badly. I was one of those people. I was working insanely hard as a consultant and I loved it and I quite liked the adrenaline. But at some point I realized that I don't want this anymore. And what really made me realize that is because I lost a three-year relationship because I was always traveling around and I wasn't taking a relationship. I wasn't noticing the warning signs. And then when I realized, well, maybe I don't have to be a consultant anymore and I don't have to become a partner anymore in this firm, then this whole other world opens up. So there's nothing wrong with aiming for partner, but you don't have to be that person.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Steve Cronin is in the studio. He's the founder of Dead Simple Saving. We're doing something of a special finance clinic, looking at the links between happiness and spending and taking your questions too. Jane's saying your guest is spot on with his advice. Words of wisdom. That's no surprise to you, Steve. You know you're a wise man.
It's nice to hear.
And a message here, and no name, of course, talking finances. You prefer to be anonymous. That's absolutely fine. Saying, I'd like to buy a house in the UK. Any good advice? I don't have enough cash. Should I take a mortgage loan or a personal loan?
Firstly, I'd say, why buy a property? Is it just to have a home? Is it to have a home in 30 years' time? Is it to let it out and make some money? I hate property. That's just me. But so do really think hard about why you want to have it. Otherwise, other than just like to have one, I would definitely recommend getting a mortgage if you can, because the loan will be secured against the value of the house rather than a personal loan, which is just secured against your own good name and your salary coming in. So the interest rate will be much lower on a mortgage. Try and go for that.
Hope that helps. Now, we are, of course, into the second month of 2020 and many New Year's resolutions have very much been washed away. But what can we do if some of our financial resolutions are among those that have gone down the drain? How can we best figure out our plans when it comes to finances throughout the year, Steve?
It's a tricky one. I think roundabout now is the time you admit to yourself that all your New Year's resolutions have fully gone out the window and it's just the same old year. But how do you expect things to get better if you're just doing the same old stuff? And so I think you just have to take ownership of this stuff. If you're too scared to have a credit card, understand why you are and just get one and be an adult. You know, if you
put your big girl or boy pants
exactly,
on.
Exactly. Put those adult pants on. And if you are a terrible spender, then say, well, I'm going to challenge myself and I'm only going to give myself 20,000 dirhams or whatever it might be to spend this month.
And that would be nice.
And I'm going to get, whether it's 5,000 dirhams or 50,000 dirhams, like I'm going to stick to that. And a good challenge will really help. But you have to take control of your own finances. No one else is going to do it for you. If you outsource this to a bank or to a financial advisor, they are going to charge you fees to do that. And they're going to charge you a lot of fees, sadly, in this part of the world. And you may not necessarily be able to trust them. So whether you've outsourced it or not, you have to take ownership of this stuff.
Now, part of what you do is intense workshops over the course of a weekend where you teach people exactly how to do that. So 2 days, 10 hours, and I think going as a couple is often encouraged if you are married, so you're on the same page financially. Can you explain a little bit about what you do in those workshops and if there's any coming up?
Yeah, so what we do is we take people, we assume no knowledge or capability in finance whatsoever, and what we do is teach you how to plan and save and invest over about 10 hours on a weekend. And so we really do transform people, which is super exciting. And we start off with your numbers and we get you to crunch your numbers so that you can see what your goals are. What are your years to retirement? How much do you need to have in a savings portfolio so that you can retire? How much do you need to be putting in the stock market every single month in a sensible, boringly diversified way? We look at your mindset. What weirdnesses have you, beliefs about money, have you inherited from your parents or from your culture or from your upbringing? And then we teach you how to save, how to put your safety nets in place, 3 to 6 months cash buffer. So if you lose your job or something bad happens to you or a family member, you're going to be okay. And then finally, we teach you what to invest in. Again, boringly sensible, takes 4 hours a year. Everyone's got 4 hours a year, right? And then how to do it as an expat, because it's not difficult. Mm-hmm. So we're not giving you personalized financial advice. We are sharing our experience and showing you, giving you guidelines so you can make your own decisions. So we've got a workshop coming up on the 21st and 22nd of February. That's Friday and Saturday. Love to see people there.
I feel like I need to be there. It's the investment thing that I find really interesting, because so many of us do get completely freaked out and go, this is something for the experts to do and I couldn't possibly be clever enough to do that. And you're all about empowering people to say, you can't, your money, and you should be doing this.
There is a crisis in the fund management and advisory business, because more and more people are realizing that they can just do it themselves. It's never been easier. And we're talking like investing in 3,000 stocks across the world at the click of one button, super diversified, super safe, over 20 years, which is the kind of time period you should be investing over anyway. It's never been easier to just do it yourself.
Steve, thank you so much for joining us from Dead Simple Saving. We'll have you in next month for some more solid, sensible advice.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.